Hi, folks. I'm Bob Main. You're listening to another episode of the Handgun World Podcast. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. This is episode 335, I believe. Anyway, I am starting off this week by basically kicking off a new series. And the new series of podcasts I'm doing, I don't know if there's going to be two or three or maybe even more than that, but I'm going to do a new series on new shooters. And I'll explain to you why in a little bit that I'm going to do that. But this would be a podcast if you're relatively new to concealed carry, or even if you don't do it now but you're thinking about it, or you're thinking about getting that first gun, or you're not quite sure whether guns are something for, you know, that you should get, or why should you even get a gun and own it, or if you already own a gun, why you should carry it, and stuff like that. Basically, if you're a new shooter, or if you have a new shooter in your life, get them to listen to these next few podcasts, probably the next two or three podcasts. I was going to write a book, and I started writing, and I got about three chapters into it, and then I kind of lost interest. I'm sorry, my patience level is just not quite that long. And I can speak better than I can write, I think, at least that's kind of the way I feel. So I thought, you know what, let me take the material that I've written that was going to be part of my book, and let me just put it out there in podcast form. So that's what I'm going to do. All I ask is, you know, I could have probably put this together and sold it as a book, you know, for a small amount of money. So all I ask is that you support me. And there are several ways that you can support me, and I'll talk about that towards the end of this episode. That's all I basically ask. But once again, get new shooters or new gun owners that you know in your life to listen to this. Maybe forward them a copy of the link where they can find this show, because they can find it on my website at handgunworld.com. If they're an iTunes user, they can find the Handgun World podcast on iTunes or Stitcher Radio or many of the other podcast players that are out there. I think my feed pretty much hits them all. So I want to start off this first series by basically titling this episode, Because I Can't Carry a Cop. And that's what I was going to title my book anyway, is, you know, Because I Can't Carry a Cop. I still might write it later on down the road, so don't copy my title. Okay? I'm going to use that title later on. I didn't coin that phrase, by the way. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. Like I said a long time ago, I read that somewhere. I think I was reading a gun forum. I'm pretty sure it was a gun forum, and I read that. And I don't know, maybe the person that I read that from, maybe that person got it from somebody else. But let me start off by talking about, you know, why I think it's necessary, or at least why I deemed that it was necessary to start carrying a gun. Maybe you can relate to this. I believe in the right to life. And, you know, more specifically what I'm talking about is the Declaration of Independence says that we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. If you're an American citizen, you're somebody that's lived here in America, and, you know, you've been here even just a short time, you've probably heard that. That's from the Declaration of Independence that was written in 1776, on July 4th, 1776. That we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among those are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Now, key words there. First of all, pursuit of happiness. It doesn't mean you're guaranteed happiness. You ever heard somebody say that? How many of you have heard that? Okay, you're not guaranteed the right to not be offended. Or that right's not protected. You know, I guess I shouldn't refer... Well, I didn't say the word granted. Please know that I don't want to refer to the Constitution of the United States granting us any rights, because all it does is protect rights. I covered that in an episode several weeks ago. It doesn't really grant. Rights do not come from government, in my opinion. So all the Constitution does is protect rights. But your right to being happy is not protected. You have the right to pursue happiness, but, you know, don't get all bent out of shape just because you're not happy. Too many people are doing that. Too many people, in the name of political correctness, seem to think they got some kind of right not to be offended. Not so. Not so. But for me, carrying a gun means that I'm exercising my right to life. Now, I believe that there are several different types of right to life. I happen to believe, it is my belief because of my faith, that as soon as a baby is conceived in its mother's womb, it is a human being. That's my belief. I have the right to believe that. We have religious liberty here in the United States of America. And I do have the right to believe that. And by the way, religious liberty is a right protected by the United States Constitution. You wouldn't think so. Right? How many of you feel like your religious liberty is under assault? No matter what religion you are. I'm not saying you have to be a Christian like me, but no matter what religion that you are, it's being assaulted. But, you know, one specific religion seems to be assaulted more than others. But I digress. That's a different subject for a different day. I defend my right to life by carrying a gun. Yes, and that is against evil people. Do you believe that evil exists? I do. We've seen it recently in the shooting of the reporter in Virginia. We've seen it recently in the shooting of the police officer in Houston, Texas, that was recently getting gas at a gas station. We've seen it in theater shootings. We've seen it in church shootings. Hatred and evil exists. There is no question about it. And I think you're really kind of playing a dangerous game if you don't believe that evil exists. Would you agree with me on that? So, you know, I would suggest that you just kind of stop listening right now if you don't believe that evil exists. Because that's how I believe that I am exercising my right to life. Now, let me ask you a question. How many of you have families? How many of you listening to this have families? Even if you don't, if you're single, I'm going to get to that in a minute. Will you do anything to protect your family? Will you also save yourself? Will you save yourself so that you can go home to that family? So that you can continue to take care of them? That's also the key. Is, you know, I have actually heard people say, well, you know, I value my family's life as much or more as I value my own. Well, your family needs you. If you're a mother or a father listening to this, your family needs you. My family needs me. And if some evil, crazy person decides that they want to take my right to life away from me, they're not just hurting me, they're hurting my family. And I want you to think about that. If you are a single person and you don't have a spouse or you don't have any kids at this point in time, maybe you will. But if you allow some evil person to take that life, take your life away from you, you won't ever have the joy that comes from being happily married and from having children, because both of those are an extreme joy. And as I travel down the freeway in the Handgun World mobile studio, I am reminded that it is truly a joy to be able to have family and to be able to have this life. And I am so glad that I happen to live in a land that is free, that allows me to exercise my right to life by carrying and owning guns. Because I am also reminded of many people, some who listen to this podcast, that don't have that right. Now, I'm not suggesting that we live by the sword. It's not what I'm talking about. For if we live by the sword, we will die by the sword, as Jesus said in the Bible. But I interpret that piece of scripture to mean that we should not purposely be using a weapon to create violence or to get our own way. I do not believe that that forbids us from using a weapon for self-defense. Remember, he said, if you live by the sword. In other words, if that is your livelihood, if your livelihood is wielding a sword, in those days it was a sword. Today, the firearms that we own and that we carry, those are our swords. If that is your way of life, if you are a violent person and you use that to impose your will on people, that's wrong. Now, of course, I'm not talking about the United States military. I'm basically appealing to the conscience of private citizens right now. So anyway, let me tell you not just Bob Main what I think about it, but the saying, live by the sword, die by the sword, is interpreted by a lot of other people. It's an idiom that basically means what goes around comes around. I think you've heard that many times, haven't you? And really, more to the point, if you use violent force or underhanded methods against other people, you can expect those same methods to be used against you. And I'll put a nice link in the show notes at handgunworld.com for this episode. I'll put a nice link as to what I'm talking about that you can read and read further on that. But the act of defending yourself or the life of a loved one, it's a big decision. So the next thing I want to talk about is the decision that you have to make. You might be one of the people that think that's, you know, still kind of wondering, well, is this really for me? I recently got a chance to take a bunch of new shooters out to the range, brand new shooters. Some of them had never shot a gun before. And a little bit later on in this episode, I'm going to play for you a segment that I recorded when I was in my car driving home from the range. And I'll let you hear that a little bit later. But I took a really good class about 3 years ago from Masad Ayoub. And you really, if you're thinking about carrying a gun or you make the decision to carry a gun, you really need to take one of Masad Ayoub's courses. And I'll put a link for those of you who don't know who Masad Ayoub is. You can go to MasadAyoub.com. If you don't know how to spell that, don't worry. Go to HandgunWorld.com. Find episode 335, and find the link to MasadAyoub.com. And he is one of the leading authorities, if not the leading authority, on the citizens' rules of engagement and the aftermath of having to use deadly force. And I actually talked to people after I took that class that were really questioning whether they really, really wanted to carry a gun or not. Because you could face dire consequences if you do have to exercise your right to life and use that gun. You know, I say to each their own. I'm still going to carry, and I always will. So in these series of podcasts geared towards new shooters, there's a few things that I want to help you decide. First of all, whether or not to carry a gun for self-defense. How to select the right gun. Some of that stuff might surprise you. I'm also going to talk about how to learn to use that gun, what kind of training I think you should get, or things that I've seen out there that seem to make a lot of sense for people, and when you should carry the gun, and things like that. So first of all, let's talk about making the decision to carry or even to own a gun. Again, as I mentioned, it's totally up to you. Please, folks, let me just say this. Don't feel pressure from friends and relatives. All right? How many of you are getting pressure from friends and relatives to check out these things called guns? All right? Because somebody else is all fired up about it. They want you to be fired up about it too. Make the decision on your own, and I'm going to lay out some things that may help you make that decision one way or the other. And if you decide after listening to my next two or three podcasts that you don't want to carry that, that's perfectly okay. I mean, this is not for everybody. But if you do decide to carry, do yourself a favor, make the commitment, get training, and carry all the time where it's legal. Now, let's talk about the results of calling 911 if you're being attacked. And again, remember, if you're being attacked by somebody that's got no regard for human life, they don't believe in what I talked about in the beginning of this episode, that you have a right to life. And they don't care whether they take that life away from you or not. And there are some people, when you talk to them and you bring up the subject of guns, when you ask some people, what would they do if they're confronted with a person who wants to commit violence against them, a lot of them respond this way. They say, I'll just call 911. Right? Do you know somebody who says that? I'll just call 911. Now, what do they think is going to happen? Do they think that some SWAT team is going to show up at their house within a couple minutes? You know, I mean, I have this funny little tagline that says, I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. And you think about that. Now, I'm going to talk about police officers a little bit later. I'm going to talk favorably about police officers because there's too much negativity out there about police officers. But nothing could be further from the truth as to what's going to happen if you call 911. But let me talk about that a little bit further. The Department of Justice, this is not me, I didn't determine this. The Department of Justice has basically determined in quite a few studies that the best police response time to 911 is roughly 3 to 4 minutes. That's now, there are occasions where it happens in less than 3 to 4 minutes. Okay? But that's, you know, On the good side of response time is 3 to 4 minutes. On the bad side, it's been known to take almost an hour. And I'm going to put a link to another website. See, I don't make this stuff up, folks. These are facts that I research ahead of time before I do these podcasts. A lot of this depends on where you live. Is it going to be 2 minutes, 3 minutes, 4 minutes, 15 minutes? Or is it going to be an hour? A lot of it depends on where you are. If you're in a rural area, obviously it's been known to take, unless you get extremely lucky, a lot longer. American Police Beat says that the average response time to 911 nationwide is about 9 to 10 minutes. Again, I'll put some research material. I'll link to some research material so you can check it out. 10 minutes. Now, think about that. Think about 10 minutes, even 3 to 4 minutes. Okay? The Department of Justice also determined that the average interaction time between criminal and victim is 90 seconds. I'll say that again. The average interaction time between a criminal and his or her victim is 90 seconds. So if we're talking 3, 4, 5 minutes for police to respond from a 911 call, and an average 90-second interaction time between criminal and victim, what does that tell you? Now, you know, I might just be some obnoxious Yankee. I mean, you know, I was born in New York City, raised in Wisconsin. I live down south now in the great gun-friendly state of Texas. And, you know, maybe I'm just some obnoxious Yankee or something. I don't know. You know, maybe I'm just some Yankee with a gun that doesn't know what he's talking about. Who knows? But one thing I can do is simple math. And if the average interaction time between bad guy and good guy, bad guy and good gal, is 90 seconds, and response time is 3 to 4 minutes, what do you think is going to happen? So this business of, well, I'll just call 911, I think you got to rethink that. So the reality is you're going to be on your own for a long time, because it's not going to take the bad guy very long to do what he wants to do. Now, this isn't meant to be disparaging against police officers, but police are really historians. They arrive after the rape or the murder or the beating or the burglary, and they create a report, a police report, to figure out what exactly happened. Okay, but by then it's over. You're finished. If you're dead, you're dead. If you're severely maimed or gravely injured, it's over. And even if you're still alive, you're going to suffer a lot of physical and emotional scars. Now, wouldn't it be nice if we could carry a cop with us all the time, but we can't. So what does a prudent person do? A prudent person carries a gun. And did you know, by the way, that did you know that police are not even obligated to protect you anyway? So even if I could carry a cop, the police officer is not obligated. I'll say that again. The police officer is not obligated to protect me. Let me explain. There was a Supreme Court case called Castle Rock versus Gonzalez. I will put a link in the show notes. You can look it up. But in the Supreme Court, the U.S. Supreme Court case of Castle Rock versus Gonzalez, the decision was determined that the police could not be sued for failing to enforce a restraining order that Ms. Gonzalez had against her ex-husband. And this resulted, by the way, the fact that her ex-husband did not obey the restraining order and the police could not enforce it, it resulted in the killing of Jessica Lenahan Gonzalez. Jessica Lenahan Gonzalez was the plaintiff. And it resulted in three children, killing three children of hers. Three! By her estranged husband. And it was a 7-2 Supreme Court decision, and it's one of the many decisions like that that relieved the police of their obligation to protect you. Now, think about that. Okay, so for all you people who want to just call 911, this lady had a restraining order against her estranged husband who turned violent. And this was not a narrow Supreme Court decision. This was not one of those narrow 5-4. This was 7-2 where they decided that Ms. Gonzalez decided that the police did not have an obligation to enforce the restraining order that Ms. Gonzalez had taken out on her estranged husband. So what is the bottom line here? And by the way, like I said, you can go to my show notes and read all about this. What's the bottom line? You have to take your own self-protection into your own hands. Period. Now, since I'm on the subject about police, I have a lot of police officers that listen to this podcast. Some of them I know personally. Some of them have sent me emails. I just recently got one from an officer in California. I'll talk a little bit about his email probably next week. And I know that most police officers take their job very seriously. And they really do want to serve and protect. Most of them. Not all of them. But let's not let a few bad apples ruin it for all the police officers. As a whole, the police are out there trying to protect us against thugs. Let's just face it. They are. There are thugs out there, and we've seen this now. We've seen thuggery a lot in the last 2 to 3 years, haven't we? Everything from nutbags to just plain gangster thugs. And most police officers take their job seriously, and they really do want to help. Okay? And I'm fairly sure that if I did have the ability to carry a cop and keep him with me 24 hours a day, then he or she would probably do a pretty good job. But that's, you know, it's just simply not possible, and it's just not practical. But for the most part, police officers want to help. Most police officers are also in favor of citizens carrying and owning firearms. You know, and I'm sure that there are states like New York and New Jersey, parts of California, although not all of California, and Illinois and Connecticut, and, you know, probably a lot of police officers in those areas that really are not in favor of citizens owning guns. And a lot of it has to do with the political climate in their jurisdiction. But let me say this. I'll shift gears a little bit here. At the time that I'm dictating this podcast, I am a certified Texas CHL instructor. Concealed handgun license is what that means. So I can teach a class, a four-hour class is all that's required in the state of Texas. 4 hours of classroom plus shooting. A very, very, very simple shooting qualification. And I can sign off on a form to certify a citizen in the state of Texas to carry a concealed handgun for their protection. And that license will be good in, I think it's 36 or 37 states now in the United States. And maybe even more pretty soon. In fact, they'll even be able to open carry in the state of Texas and many, many other states nationwide. Openly carry a handgun. Just based on my class and them passing a simple shooting certification that I sign off on. So it's a pretty hefty responsibility, and I take that very seriously. Here's what I see out there that I really don't like. I see way too many people buy a gun and a couple boxes of ammo. They go to the range. They stand in the shooting lane at the range. Shoot one box of ammo, which is usually about 50 rounds. And they either store the other box, put it up, or they save that box for their CHL class. And that's all they ever do. That's it. And if they can hit a huge target at about 3 yards with 30 or 35 of those rounds or so, roughly, then they call it good. And I'm not going to go through all the details of the shooting qualification for the Texas CHL license, because that just would... I don't want to do that because it's just way too much detail for me to start getting into. And you can Google that and you can find that easily enough. But what I want to say is it's ridiculously easy. And all these new shooters I had out about a week ago, every single one of them, even the three or four that had never picked up a gun before, every single one of them, by the time I finished with them in just a two-hour class, would have easily passed the shooting qualification for the state of Texas concealed handgun license. And some states don't even require any shooting whatsoever. Now, what they'll do is they'll leave the range and they'll repeat that about once a year. And about once a year, they'll shoot a couple boxes of ammo. Or maybe once every 6 months, they'll go shoot a couple boxes of ammo. Folks, that's not training. It's not training, and it's really not even good practice. You might not know this, but bad guys also train. I've made the mistake before of assuming that bad guys are just a bunch of thugs that get a gun off the street from their gangbanger friends and don't know what they're doing with them. And we are finding that that's not true. They learn to use their guns. Their training comes from the violent streets. Do you think that you have what it takes to stand up to someone whose training comes from the violent streets? And those bad guys, they'll show up at ranges also. Okay? There's really not a way for a shooting range, when they're renting out a lane for somebody to shoot in, there's really no way to know if that's a bad guy or a good guy for them that wants to rent that range. They really don't know that. Okay, but most of these guys, their training comes from hanging out with their gangbanger street thug friends. And it's estimated, I did this in a podcast, I talked about it several months ago, but it's estimated that some bad guys practice with their guns up to 23 times a year. Folks, that's almost twice a month. Think about that. 23 times a year. Are you practicing 23 times a year? If you think you can defend yourself against these hardened criminals by shooting 50 to 100 rounds once a year at a target 3 yards away, I'm afraid to say I think you're sorely mistaken. Just out of much respect, I'm just going to say it as respectfully as I can. And I encourage you to read an article that I'm also going to link to. It was put out by the Buckeye Firearms Association. Or at least that's where I found it, about how skilled that some bad guys have become with their firearms. So let me take a quick break and I'll be right back. Hey folks, earlier I was talking about the Texas CHL class, and I forgot to mention that a person does have to pass a lot of background checks in order to get their concealed handgun license in Texas and in most states, and there are some states where if you are, well, they call it constitutional carry, so if you're 21 years old and not a convicted felon, there we go again, see, you can't be a convicted felon that you're eligible to carry a handgun. But I just wanted to say that in Texas, in addition to that 4-hour class and very, very simple qualification, shooting qualification, you do have to pass a lot of background checks. And, you know, hey, speaking of background checks, I want to say this. You know, recently we've seen a lot of nasty stuff happen with nut jobs and guns. The guy recently who shot the reporter and the cameraman in Virginia bought his handgun legally. If I'm not mistaken, the nutbag in South Carolina, full of hatred, also acquired his gun legally, I think. I'm driving, so I'm not going to be internet Googling that one, but a lot of people get their guns legally, and even though they decide to commit an evil act with them, they got their gun legally. So I have a question that I just have to ask, especially if you're a person listening to this that is somewhat in favor of tightening up gun control. Just tell me what kind of a law could we pass that would stop these guys from doing that. You know, it's very tempting for a lot of people to say, we need more gun control, we need more gun control, we need more expanded background checks, and that is going to stop this kind of stuff, really. Okay, I would really appreciate somebody articulating to me specifically what law should be passed that we don't already have already, and just exactly how would that stop these nut jobs or evil people from doing what they're doing. I challenge people. I have been for 6 years that I've been doing my podcast, I've been challenging people to get in touch with me and clearly explain that. I have a lot of ways to get in touch with me. They can send me a voicemail. 210-646-1727. 210-646-1727. If you know how to use modern technology and you want to record an audio file and clearly explain it to me, you can email that file to me at bob@handgunworld.com. That's bob@handgunworld.com. Or you can just, you know, write me an email, bob@handgunworld.com. I don't accept the old-fashioned method of letters. You can't write me a letter. I'm not going to give you my address. But in today's modern technology world, there are a lot of things that you can do. But I really would love to hear a clear explanation. And I think the reason I haven't is there's really not a clear explanation as to how passing more laws is going to stop that. Because now what we see is nut jobs that can pass a background check. Maybe they shouldn't be able to pass a background check, but they can. And more background checks, not going to help. You know, limiting magazine capacity. That's another one. Somebody please explain to me, how is that going to stop all this stuff? The only effective way to stop a bad guy with a gun is for a good guy with a gun to do something about it. And unless somebody can come up and articulate and can come up with a much better solution, that's what I'm going to believe and that's what I'm going to stick with. So if you make the decision to carry, make the decision that you're also going to train, that you're going to learn to safely use your gun, improve your skills, and that you're going to do it more than once a year. I've heard people say this too, by the way. And then I'm going to get to the next segment where I want you to listen to my experience in working with some new shooters. This is what I've heard people say. Well, you know, Bob, all that carrying a gun stuff, it's all fine and dandy. And of course, you know, I'm not against somebody carrying a gun. I just will not go places where I'm going to have to use a gun. Yeah, people say that. I'm just not going to go anywhere where I have to use a gun. Do you go home? I mean, let me suggest that if you really do believe that you're never going to go someplace where you might need a gun, don't go home. If you have a job and you go to work, don't go home. I mean, seriously, because the chances of you needing a gun at home, in other words, someone violating your home, is probably just as good a chance as you needing it out on the street. So think about that. Maybe then, you know, before you make that statement again, or before you start to believe that way, that you'll remember what I just said and you'll realize that, yeah, you do go home. And there are some people that just don't want to admit that it could happen to them. And I'll guarantee you that everybody that has had a home invasion, I guarantee you they probably used these words after everything calmed down. And if they survived it, they said, I didn't think it would happen to me. So once you've made the decision to carry, you'll probably be just like me. You're going to be an ordinary person, not ex-military, not ex-law enforcement, not a gunsmith, not a security guard or armored car driver or anything like that. And you're living a regular life just like me. But this little voice starts to speak to you and it says something like this. I'm missing something. I just walked out my front door, started my car to go somewhere, but I feel a little naked. And what you're missing is your right to protect your life, your gun. But it won't happen right away. Give it about 30 days. 30 days of carrying every day if you make that decision. Then that voice will start to talk to you. Now, I am going to close with this. I'm going to go ahead and let you listen to about 11 or 12 minutes of talking about a great experience I recently had taking 8 people to the range who had never, either they'd never been there before or it had been a very long time since they shot a handgun. I apologize a little bit in advance. I was using my iPhone to record this, but you should still be able to hear it pretty well.
80% of all homicides are gang and drug trafficking related, according to the Bureau of Justice Statistics. That means at least 80% of all firearm homicides are caused by gangs in the drug trade. Not you, not your neighbor, despite what Dianne Feinstein might think. On average, gang members arrested for murder are often suspects in two other homicides. These two items together show that 80% of gun homicides could be stopped by incarcerating as few as 3,000 well-known repeat violent offenders. That's who Feinstein should be working against, not you. Arm yourself with facts to strip the gun control industry bare. Visit gunfacts.info and get your free copy of Gun Facts. Called Indispensable by Cam Edwards of NRA News, Gun Facts is your rapid reference guide to debunking gun control myths and shaming politicians into obedience. www.gunfacts.info.
Okay, for this segment, I want to talk about some new shooters. I am in the Handgun World mobile studio, and I'm headed home from the shooting range after taking some new shooters out to shoot. First of all, I want to say many, many thanks to one of my listeners and one of our students, Nelson. So thank you, Nelson, for setting this up. Nelson from San Antonio. He brought some people that he works with. We had 8 shooters, plus Nelson and myself, so we had 10 people there. 3 of these ladies had never shot a pistol before. So I thought it went very well. It's a lot of fun. You know, I have a lot of fun teaching new shooters and introducing new people to this wonderful hobby, and for some people a profession, for some people kind of a way of life, and for some people just something they want to do to defend themselves. I have a good time introducing them to it and giving them the basics. One of the things that I want to talk about was we had several different guns available for them to shoot. And what I thought was interesting is once I got them to the point where I was satisfied that they were safe and that they knew how to properly handle the gun and that they could properly fire it and not muzzle anybody, we had one small incident, but that was very, very easily corrected because, hey, they had a good instructor who was paying attention. Once I got them to that point to where I knew that they were going to be safe, we started putting different guns in their hands. We had them shoot a full-size M&P. We had them shoot a Glock 19. We had him shoot a big Sig Sauer P226 40 caliber. We had him shoot my M&P Shield. We had them shoot Glock 26. Let's see, we had Nelson's Ruger LC9 Pro. And let's see, what else did we have them shoot? Oh, the XDS. Lots of different guns, and basically all these people don't have any experience shooting, or not much experience, let's put it that way, very little experience. And I would ask them to shoot some of these guns side by side, 2 or 3 rounds with one gun and 2 or 3 rounds with another. And every single one of them, their favorite gun to shoot was either the M&P 9 full size or the Glock 19. Once they put a G26 in their hand or the Ruger or the Smith & Wesson Shield or the XDS, their favorite, they didn't like those smaller guns much. And by the way, we had them shoot the Glock 26 with the flush fitting magazines, not with a magazine extension. I mean, let's face it, folks, you know, the Glock 26 was meant to be a short grip pistol. It was meant to be a pistol that where you use the flush fitting grip. That's the whole point. You want the grip to be as small as possible, but you still want to have a 9mm Glock. So that's how I had them shoot that G26. Every single one of them would much rather shoot the M&P 9 full size or a Glock 19. So what does that tell you? I thought what's interesting is that this is one of the reasons I get real frustrated when people try to sell brand new shooters on small guns. Because they don't like the small guns. Small guns are for experienced people. They're for people that shoot a lot and practice with the small guns. People that are not real experienced or people that are kind of green, you want to have a decent-sized gun in their hands. And that just proves it. That just proves it. I tell you something else that showed itself. Here's something else that showed itself. A couple of shooters did this. No, actually, there was one that did it. And a couple did not. With the Springfield XDS, that's a gun that I cannot recommend for new shooters, and I'll tell you why. And this is from experience, folks. This is from me teaching a two-hour class to beginners. If they don't have a good grip on the gun, it won't fire. And a lot of people say, oh, that's never happened to me on my XDS. Well, maybe because that's your, because you're good enough of a shooter to where you're always grabbing that gun and depressing that grip safety. But I had a young lady in my class that picked up the gun, and I had not had a chance yet to teach her proper grip of a pistol. I didn't get a chance to teach her to use the shooting hand and grab as high on that gun as she can get her hand right up as high up underneath that tang as she can get, because that's the proper way to grip any semi-automatic pistol. So when she picked up that XDS to fire it, her grip was too low. And she pressed the trigger and nothing happened. Why? Because she didn't depress the grip safety. And I was showing Nelson a couple things when we were getting set up for the class. You know, it's possible if you practice like force-on-force scenarios, if you practice where somebody's maybe grabbing your strong hand, the hand that you draw your gun with, and you can't get, I mentioned this last week, and if you cannot get a real good grip on a Springfield pistol or even a 1911, you're going to fail to depress the grip safety and you won't be able to fire the gun. I don't make this stuff up, folks. I see it happen in real life. And it happened in real life today with a brand new shooter. And I've seen it happen in real life at a training class. And it was not a force-on-force training class. You know, but you have to think about things like that. And I know the XDs are very, very well-built guns. And they're very, you know, they're very high-quality guns. And I don't want you to think that I'm trashing XDs. There's just, you know, on a defensive handgun, think about this. Well, first of all, what is the purpose of a safety? Any safety. Grip safety, thumb safety, anything. What's the purpose of that? The purpose of it, you have to remember, is to stop the gun from firing. When you're being attacked, you don't want to stop the gun from firing. You want the gun to fire. Anytime, with any grip, in any shooting position, under any occasion, under any kind of conditions, you want the gun to fire. The gun going bang is the most important thing. A lot of people are not that well trained. A lot of people are not that well trained, but they still might reach for a gun to defend themselves. Now, in an ideal world, wouldn't it be nice if everybody went and got some good quality training? But there are people out there that own a firearm that are going to use it for self-defense that will never, ever get training. That's just a fact of life. There are people who will never get training to use that defensive firearm. So here's what I say about that. Make sure those people have a gun that has no safety on it. And you might think, well, Bob, oh man, my God, if they're not trained, they want to have all kinds of safeties. They want to have all these redundant safeties to keep them from having an accidental discharge. No. No, all they need is to have somebody just show them some basics of gun safety. You can teach somebody the four rules of gun safety and have them demonstrate it in 10 minutes. And as long as they've got that down, okay, 15 or 20 minutes. Since safety is an important issue, spend 15 or 20 minutes. Have them demonstrate it for you several times. Have them memorize the four rules of gun safety. I had three people in my class today that had never shot a gun before, and they were incredibly safe. Why? Because I made sure that I had them demonstrate to me with a dummy gun and then with a real gun that they knew how to be safe with it. Same with carrying around in the chamber. Carry a gun with no safety, so it doesn't matter what your grip is like, and carry a gun with around in the chamber all the time. All right, so again, it's a training issue. And here's the thing. It's also a lack of training issue. A lack of training on how to properly grip and fire a handgun can cause problems if you have a handgun that won't fire if you don't have an ideal grip. You follow? Follow what I'm saying? Okay, enough about that. I think I've kind of made that point quite a bit. But boy, it sure was fun. It sure was a lot of fun to introduce new shooters to doing this. It's very, very rewarding. Very rewarding. I really enjoyed it. You know, sometimes I enjoy teaching the new shooters just as much as more accomplished shooters. Well, quick break, and the next segment's coming up.
Okay, thank you for listening. Once again, I'm sorry about the audio quality. You know, when I went back and I listened to that myself, I realized I had made a mistake, and I had mentioned that I did not have a chance to show that lady who couldn't fire the Springfield XDS how to properly grip a handgun. That's wrong. I actually did. I'm going back and running through that class back in my head again. I did cover that. But, you know, there's a lot of information that a new shooter has to absorb sometimes in a class, and they don't always remember everything that they're taught. So I'll just leave that what it is for what it's worth and let you think on it for a while. All right, folks, next week I'm going to get deeper into this subject about guns for beginners. Next week's podcast will be called a little bit different, something different, different title. I am going to talk about selecting a gun. It's been a long time since I've talked about that. I'm going to talk about selecting a firearm, and that's going to be most of the topic matter for next week. Again, I was going to put this into a book and just decided to go ahead and speak it. You got it at no cost. If you don't mind supporting me, there's several ways that you can do it. I don't run a bunch of commercials on this show. The easiest and most cost-effective way to support me is if you like to buy things on Amazon.com, just use my Amazon store at HandgunWorld.com first. So go there first, HandgunWorld.com. Click my Amazon store. Then buy your products on Amazon. You can even log into your Amazon account after that, after you go through my link, and then that way I'll get some credit for it. If you like to watch videos and you're at the point where you say, all right, Bob, you convinced me, and you go out and you get your first gun or whatever, or maybe you're an experienced shooter and you've been doing this a long time, but you decided to listen to this anyway and you want to watch some training videos for $8 a month, you can access videos that Ben Branham and I have put together on YouTube, which these are videos that you have to pay for to watch, and you can find those by going to the Shooters Club page at HandgunWorld.com. The Shooters Club page at HandgunWorld.com. There are also many training classes that Ben and I like to teach, and we might be coming to your area, so you can also check out the list of training classes that might be coming to your area. And also keep watching my page at handgunworld.com for the training classes that are going to be going on in 2016. Some things might surprise you. Okay, with that said, folks, my name is Bob Main. If this is the first time that you've listened to my podcast, let me remind you, I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. Thanks again, and I'll talk to you next week. Goodbye.